Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
Well, we want to welcome you once again to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. I'm Brent Smith alongside my very good friend, Shane Stetsny. A big weekend coming up for ERX Motor Park. I am really excited, Shane. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I'm super excited. We have a lot to cover, both from Crandon. It's been a minute since you've heard from us, you know, with the holiday weekend kind of falling between the two races. We took a little hiatus, a little break there. First off, do you still have all your fingers after Independence Day?
Yeah, absolutely. I was trying to play it safe. I needed to make it to ERX Motor Park. I thought of you over the holiday, and you know, it gets dangerous, especially getting our age.
Right. Yeah, I was lighting off some cheap fireworks in the alley. I had a good time with it. Came through without any burns or anything, so I'm all good.
Yeah, I mean, the holidays were awesome, but now it's time to go back off-road racing. I mean, we're already almost at the halfway point of the season, Shane. It's getting interesting. The gloves are definitely starting to put themselves back on and maybe come back off. But I'm telling you, it's hard to tell who's going to win coming into this weekend. And we have some people that might not make it yet, still have a slight chance. But man, it's off-roads.
Yeah, let's talk about the big headlines. You alluded to one of those there. But the biggest headline for me, and it's fantastic news, is that Caleb Bell from Modkart is fine after his crash. There was that extended red flag on Sunday at Crandon in round six. They had to cut the top off of his cart to get him out, just being super extra cautious. And as of the next day, which would have been June 21st, Caleb, who was fine, no injuries, banged up obviously, but clean bill of health, he was already asking his dad if they could get the cart ready for ERX.
Wow, what a tough race car driver. And that was scary, right? We were up in the crow's nest in the announcer's booth, and you know, there's not much to say. You just want them to be safe, and
right,
that goes to show you how good the cars are built. And anytime you get licked like that and smashed that hard, it's never a good day, because it'll ring literally your bell.
He's ready to race. Unfortunately, the truck is not. They will not be racing. Caleb won't be racing at ERX Motor Park. I believe he does plan to come join us in the booth, so that's going to be great to catch up with him. And the team also wanted to thank the Crandon and Champ Off-Road safety workers. They specifically thanked Whitey Brownell, said he was, you know, immediately there, kind of directing traffic and coordinated the extraction, I guess you want to call it. So, you know, we try to show our safety team a lot of love whenever we get the chance, and that's why the drivers do really appreciate it.
Yeah, and we do, year after year. You know, if you're going to go upside down or get in a bad wreck, I mean, it's nice to see those guys out there, because they make you feel comforted in the bad time you're having, and they're going to do anything under their power to make sure you're safe, as well as getting you out as fast as they can. And we've seen them do some crazy things over the years in some good ways, and it saved people. I mean, back in the day when Rob McCracken started on fire, I'll never forget that safety crew was on and helping them get out, stop, drop, and roll like the good old days. And, you know, you need them out on that racetrack. And that's why when the inclement weather comes in, we have to take that chance, you know, in a way, when you put those safety crew guys out there. When it's not good, man, we want them safe as well as our drivers.
Crandon was tough, not just on Caleb Bell, but on a lot of people, though. You know, I guess the other big headline is Keegan Kincaid, after losing a motor at Crandon, still sidelined. He's not going to make it to ERX, and that's a big hit to the Pro 2 field. And Joey Machosik as well from Pro Light. As of it's Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Central, he's a maybe right now. They're waiting on the last bits and pieces to actually show up at the shop to put the truck back together.
Yeah, I mean, the adversity that Joey and Keegan have to have coming through the rest of this year is just, it's got to be stressful. I know for Keegan, you've seen what went on the past couple years, just bouncing up and down, just trying to make everything work, getting all his ducks in a row, and he's doing everything, I promise you that. But it just goes to show you how hard it is in this sport to continue on, to get the truck done, to get your truck there and your family and your crew there. It's expensive. It's not an easy turnaround. These motors are as much as $60,000-$70,000 in the Pro 2s. And you look at Keegan, the level he's been racing over the years is just nothing but at the top. And to see him struggle, it really bums me out, as well as looking at Joey. I mean, he's independent team trying to run pro lights, showed his speed, showed the wins he could do, and then having engine trouble. So it goes to show you that they can't pull deep out of their pockets anymore. So yeah, right. I really hope everything goes well.
Not even necessarily the cost of keeping a program going, but, you know, like in Joey's case, just can't get the parts fast enough.
Right, right. And that makes it tough. I mean, I talked to Daryl today. I mean, we're recording right now on Tuesday, and he was just stressing out, and he's like, it is what it is, Brent, right? We can't do anything that's not set in stone yet, but he's ready to go. They're hoping maybe Kyle Cooper can pick up the truck or the motor for their truck and bring it TRX, but Daryl's ready to rock and roll. He's ready to go drive down wherever he has to get it, and it's just a matter of hours, he said, right? He's like, our biggest deal is we need the parts.
On the sportsman side of things, too, we had a couple really wild races. Super Stock Truck had a really crazy race where a bunch of the fastest, the usual suspects kind of got shuffled into the back and tangled up in a big pileup down in the gravel pit, and we had some of the more unproven drivers mixing it up in the top five. Man, Sportsman side by side had like that huge crash up in turn two. That race was another one that had enough yellows from a couple different incidents that one of the drivers, Josh Stenberg, who was involved in the big pileup up by the barn, before that race was done, he was already poking his head into the announcing booth and said, "Hey guys, just so you know, I'm fine." So, that, I mean, that's just how wild that race was. Like, what was up with that? I mean, what is that just? That was the dice roll that we got, and everybody was a little bit wild at Crandon, or is it a product of the high speeds, or what's going on there?
Well, Shane, what's going on is they're all trying to drive for the same spot on the racetrack, and they're driving 120%, and there's days like this, right? There's days and rounds like that that nothing works out, and you just hope you're in the front three at the end of the day, because you never know when a race extends that long. Are we going to cut it short? Is it going to be green, white, checkered? The white flag giving on the restart right away, you know, you just never know in our sport what's going to happen. So when bad things continue to happen, you got to put yourself in those good finishing spots if you can. But hey, you know, we talked to a lot of drivers, and if it's not your day, some days you just got to take the bad days and move on.
Right. Yeah. Live to fight another day.
Right.
And as always, being June Crandon, we also had to deal with a little bit of rain. But I want to say that especially over the last 3-4 years, I think Crandon has made the correct choice every single time on whether to delay or whether to cancel or whether to just push forward. And when those rains came through at Crandon this time, they nailed it. We had a delay that kept getting a little bit longer. You know, they kept adding 15-minute chunks onto it. You and I were up in the booth looking at each other going, there's no way we're going to race on this track. You know, we're elevated vantage point looking at the racetrack going, I don't think this is going to happen. You know, we might get shut down here. And then lo and behold, they made the exact right choice. Pro buggy when we fired it with the pro racing in round five. A little bit wet, but not as bad as you and I expected it to be. And then by the time we got later on in the schedule, it was perfect. Crandon nailed it again.
Yeah, and there was a lot of drivers and crew members coming up to me when we had those breaks when we were going back and forth. And they were saying, you know, there's no way. I said, hey, I'll just tell you one thing. I'm not no meteorologist at all.
We know that.
I'll tell you right now that Crandon does wonderful things to their racetrack. So just bear with us. And I didn't think we were going to be totally done, but we did look in each other's eyes and said, you know, this could be it. Because we've seen some crazy rain days at Crandon. But obviously, they have their drainage where they need it to be, and where it runs out, it does dry up fairly quickly. I mean, I think it was, what, Shane, like 2-3 races in, we had a perfect track.
Yeah, you know, the first race line, you started to come in a little bit, and then it widened, and then pretty soon it was just a great racetrack by the end of the day. I do want to talk about the winner from the end of the day. It would have been Pro 4 Round 6, the nightcap on Saturday evening, Mickey Thomas. After he wins a race at Antigo, comes back, wins a race at Crandon, then goes out, wins the Forest County Pottawatomie Community Cup on Sunday. We knew that he was, once he got up to speed in Pro 4, got used to that style of driving, and then, you know, built a brand new truck just to suit his own driving style, that he was going to be fast. We weren't surprised when he won at Antigo, but now he's proven he can win on the tightest track on the circuit and the biggest track on the circuit. What does that mean for Mickey Thomas the rest of the way throughout this year?
What it means, Shane, is he's dialed in. He knows how to win anywhere he goes, and he's got that confidence. And you hear it in his voice and in his celebration, right? I mean, the silent assassin,
he really did quiet everyone down.
I mean, it's not that we didn't think he could do it. It's just when every duck was going to be in a row, he was going to be hard to beat. And he was telling people that. And to put forth the effort, getting the crew to where it needs to be, and going out there and performing at the top level, there was nobody catching him in that cup race.
Right, and that's now three of the last four times that he's taken a green flag, he has been the winner of that race. You know, it seems like reliability is always the toughest mountain to climb in Pro 4. I mean, we've seen it numerous times over the past handful of years. Drivers come in, I'm thinking of Cole Mamer when he built his first Pro 4, fast right away, but struggled with reliability. That seems like, for Mickey Thomas, that they've got it figured out. Consistently finishing races and now starting to consistently win races, that's scary.
Yeah, his records show it. You know, he's going to be there up until the end, no matter what class he's in. And I watched him in the Pro Light days, got to broadcast a lot out west for him, and as well as watching him go into the Pro 2 and just dominating at the end of his career in Pro 2. He was the man to beat on the big tracks, especially now, like you said, he's good at the short tracks, good at the big tracks now, and that's what we're going into as ERX Motor Park. It's a high elevation, big fast straightaways, technicality, and that truck is literally tough enough to go to war, but really, really light at the same time.
Well, I was curious because, you know, Mickey was a Pro 2 champion a couple years ago. I looked back through all the results. I was surprised that his last win at ERX was Pro 2 Round 5 of 2021.
Wow. So
it's been a long time since he's been on top at ERX Motor Park. Do you think he returns to victory lane this weekend? It's going to be a little tougher with RJ Anderson in the field.
Hey, anything can happen, right? And cool to see RJ Anderson back in the field as well. And Mickey Thomas is ready. I mean, he's showing the speed, like we said. He's going to come out swinging this weekend because he would love to sweep a weekend at ERX Motor Park. Being in that drought, not having a win for that many years, I know it's killing him deep down inside, and it's going to be scary for anybody else in Pro 4. Granted, we have CJ Grease back. Johnny's been rocket ship fast. Jimmy Henderson as well. I mean, we're in for a treat now that we're putting RJ back in the field.
Yeah, it's going to be super fun to see, you know, especially with how dramatic, especially Pro 4 tends to get at ERX Motor Park. I think we're in for probably another instant classic, if not two, over those two rounds. By the way, I know you've been staring at this in my notes for this show. There's a big blacked out section, and I found this kind of interesting. Mickey Thomas, Pro 2 winner round 5 of 2021. Do you remember who won round 6 at ERX that year? Did you cheat and
look at the answer? No, I absolutely did not cheat.
Do you remember?
You're going to stump me.
Someone with one career Pro 2 win. Are you stumped?
Yeah, I am.
Round 6, 2021 Pro 2 winner was Trevor Layton.
Wow.
Who could forget? Well, another person who made it to the top of the winner's circle at Crandon in Pro Spec, Dylan Parsons. Round 5 winner in Pro Spec. Man, it felt like that had been a long time coming, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. And I was waiting for that bounce back. I mean, he's had so many issues, having issues with the transmission when we've seen firsthand at Anago coming leading into Crandon. It was like, okay, where's Dylan? Where's Dylan? Then all of a sudden when he got that great hole shot, I mean, he never looked back, and he was definitely showing his speed once again. I knew it was just a matter of time, but man, he's on the right track again.
Yeah, that was his first win in Pro Spec since his championship year, 2024, round 13. So very nearly two full calendar years, like a year and 9 months since his last win.
Yeah, and Shane, it's not like you can guarantee your next win's going to be at ERX Motor Park with 17-plus trucks in the field.
Right.
I mean, it is crazy the talent we have. I'm so excited to get to ERX Motor Park with the Pro Spec division because, man, what a hell of a show they put on at Crandon. And I got our blood flowing. I mean, you have the rookies doing such a phenomenal job, Braden Boshaw accidentally looping it out in Argonne Loop, but
yeah,
at the same
while
time
trying to
showing
pass for
strength.
The lead, though.
Yeah, and he was hunting down Chris Vandenhelzen.
Well, on the other side of the coin, I guess, in Pro Spec, man, Wyatt Miller just cannot kick this bad luck streak that he's on. He was 12th in round 4 at Antigo, comes to Crandon, 15th and 13th over those two rounds. fell all the way to seventh in the pro spec points, 50 points out of first, which in that class isn't as much as it seems like, because like you said, it's so competitive that a couple of races can get topsy-turvy and you can take a big bite out of that deficit. But I'm wondering, you know, usually over the last 6 years that we've been calling races together, it seems like Lena and then especially Bark River is kind of where like the points desperation starts to set in, where the guys who are in the mix but not leading the points really start to, you know, take it up a notch as far as the intensity. Do you think Wyatt's already in that position, being 50 points down?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's go time. There's no waiting around anymore, right? There's nothing he can do about the breakdowns, mechanical failures. Ryan Beat's putting him in the truck that he needs to be in to win, and some days you just don't get that luck on your side. The late Rick Husman always said it, you know, 80% of it was luck, you know, and you have to have that on your side. And Wyatt's going to bounce back. He's going to win some more races this year, but to be in that deficit with the points, he can't look at nothing else but getting those consistent finishes with the top threes if he wants to be in that points race at the end of the year. And we've seen how that went down with Chris Vanden Elzen last year. You know, he had a chance all the way up until California, and then just a couple mistakes, and that's all it takes sometimes. Yeah, it just
gets away from you.
Yeah, and that's what can happen in Wyatt's favor, right? Things can happen to other drivers when he can capitalize on it, and that's where you score some big points. But I don't see five, six drivers just falling off the pace these next two weekends. So it's going to be a challenge for Wyatt.
Well, another, I guess, notable trend that we saw, I guess, at Crandon was win streaks. A couple came to an end, and some were lengthened. Michael Meister, after just about the worst possible weekend at Wheatland for the opener, has now won four straight in Pro Buggy and is also back in the points lead. I remember having him on this podcast after Wheatland, and he basically said, like, yeah, it's a big hill to climb, and we're just going to do everything we can. Well, he's back on top of the points just like that.
Yeah, you always got to keep one eye on Michael Meister, and that's how the weekend went, right? The minute he got out front, it was like goodbye, because once he gets in his zone, he had a deficit coming in fourth in the points to just flip-flop that whole weekend and dominate. I mean, he set himself up for a great rest of the year. Now he can step back a little bit. Granted, he wants to win races and keep continuing on doing the best he can, but now there's some thoughts in his head where if I can't get to the leader but I'm still in second or third, I'm still picking up big points to continue leading. Like Billy Booth right now, he's just having some bad, tough luck right now, but yet still finishing in the top three, top five all the time. So you got to finish races and hope that Michael, if you're anyone else, has a bummer day. But nobody wants to put that in each other. They want to duke it out right to the end.
I do want to also give a shout out to Bo Ambos, who got on the podium in round six in Pro Buggy. Again, it's his rookie year, sixth time out in the car. He puts it on the podium. I've been keeping my eye on him because I've been a fan of Bo's and a friend of Bo's since he was racing light buggy forever ago. He's been getting noticeably faster every single race weekend.
Yeah, and you're not seeing him fade off. Nothing against Bo, but you know he's learning how to drive the car and what the car likes. I had a chance to talk to him when we were at Crandon for a couple minutes with Tony Keepers, and they were both telling me, like, oh yeah, we're just learning and see what the car likes, and now we can sit back and drive it. And that's where Bo's being a little bit more comfortable showing that speed. He's staying in that top five. He's running really quick. I mean, we were calling him in the top three, two, a couple different times. So, I mean, that's great to see someone moving up the ladder and to adapt that quickly. In his eyes, he's still learning a lot, but you got to give him credit. Bo's doing a great job.
I remembered a conversation that we had on this show with Billy Booth when he was maybe in his second year in Pro Buggy. It was early in his time in Pro Buggy, and he was telling us there was so much that he had to unlearn from the limited buggies to relearn how to drive the Pro Buggy. And I said that to Bo, and he's like, that is exactly what's going on. He said, there's so many things that are baked into his instincts from light buggy in 1600 that don't work at all in Pro Buggy. So he's trying to figure all that out. And like I said, though, we're seeing the growth, and it's happening pretty fast for him.
Yeah, and that's what we like to see. And it makes it a lot more fun to call when our drivers aren't frustrated trying to learn each and every time. And I mean, it makes it easier on the other drivers, right? If your new rookies come into the field and they adapt quickly, that's one guy you don't have to worry about that yellow tape, right? I always said that growing up through the fields. If you're running around a couple rookies that don't have a clue what's going on, they can end your day quicker than you can win a race.
Another fun win streak that continued, this is more if you're a fan of chaos like me, Sportsman Side-by-Side through six rounds now has six different winners. Are we seeing another stock truck from 2 years ago situation? Do you think that's going to continue at ERX?
Hey, it could happen. Hey, Shane, it can lay it right down till the end. And we've seen that, like you said, in stock truck. That was so much fun to watch all year.
Yeah, I think we made it to double digits in stock truck that year. 10 races, 10 different winners.
That's amazing. And to be in a class like that, right? You know you got the chance. It's like everybody else is winning. You know, you get that confidence in your program, and it makes for some great racing. And we've seen some great side-by-side divisions in our series. And you see Eric Hill, he really has turned it on, having one of the older cars in the class and still keeps fighting a new day no matter what happens.
Yeah, it was great great to see him back on the podium, too, on Father's Day, no less. And, you know, he made a point to say that it was a meaningful moment for him.
Yeah, what better way, though, is on Father's Day to get up on that podium? You've seen the emotion in his eyes and with his kids, and that's what it's all about. You're taking time away from your family and your friends throughout a weekend and weeks leading up to it. It really gives a guy a lot of gratification knowing that, hey, you know, I did it at the big house on Father's Day, and you want to make your kids proud no matter what you do.
And then one last thing from Crandon that stood out to me. We probably didn't see this coming, but did 1600 Buggy give us like the ultimate WTF moment of the weekend, for lack of a better way to say that? Connor Schultz, Mike Seifelt battling for the lead. They get stuck on one another. Kind of Connor's parked on top of Seifelt's car. Both of them go into the wall. Connor flips. They both finished, by the way, but wild scenes in 1600.
Yeah, I would have loved to have been a little bird on the shoulder of both those drivers to see what Michael Seifelt had to say about what went on. And it was crazy, right? You explained it well. We were like, okay, what is going on with this class right now? Nobody wants to hold back. And sometimes you get that contact and you're not going to be very friendly after a race like that, no matter what way you are and how old you are, how young you are in the class. You're out for the win, and you know how Michael can be, and he's been around a long, long time, and he doesn't like to put up with anything.
It's weird to me that 1600, like, it is kind of a fraternity of sorts, and all the drivers do have a lot of respect for one another. And, you know, I'm not just paying lip service to that. It's true that they do help each other out quite a bit. But it seems like once or twice a year, a 1600 race just comes apart at the seams and we see something crazy like that.
Yeah, and you're going to get that. And, you know, and I respect them how well they do race against each other. Some days we have a clean race, but some days, hey, those open wheels, they get caught with one another.
Most days we have a good clean race in that class. That's what makes bizarre that, like I said, it seems like maybe once a year you get this strange boiling over of all the anxiety or whatever it is.
Yeah, we love to see it. It's fun to call at the same time. It's like, okay, I wouldn't want to be under that helmet at the end of that race. But, hey, they're keeping it entertaining. And who knows what we'll see at ERX Motor Park. You know it's going to be a challenge through those split lanes. You got to find the fast line in that class as well. And when the
play nice.
Numbers are as big as they are, it's not easy.
Well, one thing that always makes your life a little bit easier is the Shop by Vehicle tool at amsoil.com. You can choose the right product and packaging option for whatever it is that you're trying to drive and get fast free delivery right to your door. Visit amsoil.com to learn more, and we appreciate Amsoil and their support of this podcast. We are now joined by our guest on this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. You see him racing Champ Off-Road in Mod Cart, and you may also see him racing Dirt Late Model at Dirt Tracks around Wisconsin. It's Corbin Wassenberg. Corbin, thank you so much for coming back on the show a second time after those tech issues scrapped our first interview.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So this is your third year in Mod Cart and Champ Off-Road, but the late models, that's brand new to you. You just started doing that this summer. I know right after Wheatland, you went out, you won the heat and feature. I think that was at Shawano. And then just recently, you were in Eagle River Racing and had a good night there as well. So what I want to know is, how did this opportunity come about for you to get behind the wheel of a late model?
So a couple of people that we knew, the guy that owns the late model, he was reaching out to see if any like youth people wanted, or younger kids wanted, to get a chance to drive something like this, just trying to get the youth into the sport and grow it more. And the people that he reached out to, we knew, and we were their first option. And it was almost a good deal too good to pass up.
Man, you can't really pass up a deal like that, right? Like you just said, and anytime you could drive something with that much power, like we've said in the past, it'll make anything else seem a little bit slower.
Yeah, I love driving it. It's super fun, and the mod cart has, they both have their pros and cons some nights, but it's really fun.
How tough was it to actually, you know, obviously you're still learning the late model, but how tough was it at first to kind of get comfortable in it? And were there some things that you had to like unlearn from the mod cart?
Not really so much unlearn. It was more just driving a lot harder, getting used to how it feels through the ruts and how it transfers the weight over different, how it gets up on the bars and hikes up, especially on the slicked off tracks, just how to keep all four tires not spinning.
Yeah, it's not easy to like try to adapt as fast as you would like to in your own head, but anytime you can get into anything, you know, it just makes your brain work that much harder. And I love it. I love what you're getting to do. And I'm not going to lie, it's a little jealous, right? At Shane and I's age, it's like, dude, I can't imagine if we were that age and got that opportunity, but that's the way the world is today. And you got to take every note you can and put it into the off-road world as well.
Yeah, it makes me drive my mod car a lot harder, just a little learning how to drive that and get used to that, since it has so much more power and speed. It just makes my mod car like not as much of a handful to drive.
I was going to ask that because, you know, like, I don't think I could handle a mod cart. You know, maybe I'm just not skilled. That's probably a big part of it. But like a mod cart seems intimidating, you know, especially whether, you know, in your case, coming out of the 570s or for kids coming out of like short course cart into a mod cart, it seems really intimidating. But like making that step from the late model back to the mod cart, you have to look at it like, well, maybe this thing's not that bad, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit different getting used to the mod cart after kind of getting it out of the late model, but it's still, after a while, it kind of just comes to you and you're a lot better driving it.
Is there a lot in your own head each and every week that you put yourself through in the different divisions that you run now? I mean, do you have to set back and be like, okay, I'm in this car, I got to mind boggle what I need to do, or does it just come naturally once you hit the gas pedal?
Kind of have to get in that the mindset of what car you're in, because obviously the mod car, you have to shift. It's kind of like when you hop in the late model, you kind of don't know what to really do with your right hand. otherwise, yeah, the late model is just, between them two, you just have to kind of get in the mindset of which one you're in as soon as you get into the track, and just go from there.
So looking back at your beginnings in any kind of motorsports, you know, you come from a dirt track family. I know that your uncle was a really accomplished dirt track racer, and, you know, other people in your family have raced. Tell us about the history that your family has on the dirt oval side of things.
Yeah, my uncle, I believe at Antigo, he has one championship there. And he has a couple championships also. So like, I think in Outagamie Speedway, and then also in Shawano in my hometown. And then he won the Super Nationals. I've been around oval racing for a long time, or just racing in general. I started in go-karts and just moved my way up from there. And that's just all I've known since I've been little, about a month old. They're just racing.
How does a dirt track, a dirt oval kid, get introduced to short course off-road? Where did that connection get made?
I sat in a pro side-by-side once, and I just kind of fell in love with it. It was actually Leland Tice's pro side-by-side at the time. I sat in one, and I just felt great to sit in one, and I just was like, we got to get into this. It seems like something fun and something exciting to do.
Is your plans to stay around off-roads, or do you plan on moving on to bigger and better things in like the circle track world? I mean, not saying that it's anything different than off-roads, but like, what's your drive? I mean, obviously I know you love off-road racing, but if a spark opens and somebody has a ride for you there, are you going to commit?
I don't know. We've talked about it for a while now, what we want to do in the future. We haven't really made up our minds. We've been back and forth with what we want to do and what I want to do as a driver. Yeah, like you said, it would be awesome if we got another ride or something like that, but it's also kind of, where does the pocketbook come in?
Right,
right.
Which we can afford.
Saying the history about your family, I mean, they won some races. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, my dad does a lot. He was basically the main pit guy for him for a while, and he's really smart with all the oval stuff, and we've been have some good names behind us trying to help us out with the oval stuff and just getting setups, even setups in mod cart. He's been helping me out with that, and we've been doing pretty good together.
This is, I believe, your 7th year of short course racing after, growing up at dirt ovals. Do you remember, when you started racing, especially in short course, feeling like it was just an entirely different world?
Yeah, the atmosphere is definitely a lot different. It's a lot different kind of racing. Instead of racing more into the later afternoon into night, we race all day, basically all day long. And then people are really nice and really welcoming and really wanting to help out and get us started into this. I started in 170s, and we just kind of figured out what we needed to do. And from there, we just moved on and kind of figured out basically our first year in a class is just a figuring out year, trying to drive the car and stuff. And then we move on to there from the second year, just to making changes and stuff.
So you have a pretty good game plan of where you want to go. You're just taking it baby steps, right?
Yeah, basically.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about Corbin is, you, like I said, started a handful of years ago, and then since then, now both your younger brothers are drivers themselves. They both race in youth side by side, one in a different series and one in Champ Off Road. How much are they looking at you for coaching, for advice?
They look to me a lot for advice. I help them out a lot just trying to get used to the car and stuff, like mostly the four-wheel drive. That's a big key factor of just how to use it and how like to learn when it engages and when it disengages, and just how hard you can drive the car. Like I teach them a lot of that, and then I mean they kind of look at each other also to figure out what they can improve on and what they can do. Like the Mayhem race not too long ago, they were right behind each other and they were constantly making improvements just off each other.
That's huge, right? I mean, it's great to have a brother like you to bounce off of, and they're only going to learn that much faster in my eyes, and anything you can do for them, I mean, kudos to you, dude. Like, you want to get them up to pace because you know how fun it is once stuff works and you learn how to drive a class. It can be frustrating for years on end.
Yeah.
Along the way, have any other drivers, like younger kids, looked at you for advice? Like kids from that stuck around in the 570s after you won your championship and got out?
Yeah, Grayson Arneson, he races mod car now. He still kind of looks at me to see if I can give him any tips and tricks to maybe improve or even like setups on the car or stuff to make it go back onto the track every single time. Or especially in the 570, we really worked hard with him, and I worked hard with him spotting for him and then just helping him learn the car and get faster. And also Liam Nicholas, he bought our old short course car, and I also used to spot for him in 170, just helping him get smoother. And we've been helping him also with stuff to do with the car and just getting him faster and faster every time he hits the track.
Well, you must be doing something right with Grayson because, I mean, he really jumped out of his shell a little bit the last weekend at Crandon. I seen a lot of speed out of him, a lot of confidence. And man, I mean, that's what I think he needed. And he's really showing a lot of speed at an early age with that mod cart now.
Yeah, I was actually, we came to halfway and I was surprised to see him up there battling with all them guys.
It's awesome. He was running.
I watched the video back. He was staying right with them guys, not losing them at all. Just he said if he would have had a little bit more gearing, he'd think he would have been right with them guys and stayed with them all race. But also, we went after halfway, and I mean, you move out of the line one time and he went right back. Learned that the hard way.
As you've kind of become a coach to other drivers, do you find that, looking at racing a different way has helped you improve your own skills?
Yeah, kind of just like looking at the track and stuff, just seeing what it's doing and kind of looking towards other people to tell them or help me out to get better out on the track. Like there's a lot of people that help me out, kind of just making my lines better and seeing where I can improve and just helping me out.
Yeah, and when you're taking information for other people, right? It's like a grain of salt. It's like some people only give you so much, but at the same time, you want to pull and be a sponge as much as you can to learn what you can.
Yeah, I kind of just I see what they all are thinking, and if it makes sense to me, I improve. And just a lot of the stuff has been making sense to me, and they've been helping me out really good.
Has it been stressful for you, or have you been enjoying it?
I've been enjoying it. It's kind of nice to see feedback from other people, like especially in the late model, kind of people acknowledging that I'm so young and like so, I don't know, not driving through people basically to get to the front, and that I can actually handle the car, and that I'm so young and so not outspoken and a lot nicer about stuff.
Outspoken, I love it.
And yeah, it's been pretty good so far.
I want to talk a little bit too about we already talked about Grayson having a really good round five, I believe, at Crandon and Mod Cart. Every kid in that class is like a champion from another class, or had won a bunch of races in other classes, or has won already in Mod Cart. What's it like to actually line up? These are kids, these are drivers that you know really well because you see them 7, 8 times a year. What's it like to line up against all those really talented drivers in that class?
Yeah, I know. Most of them are really, really talented. All of them, basically. I raced a couple of these other people in other classes, and just kind of after a while, you get a hang of their driving and just know what they're gonna do, and you capitalize on it or play mind games with them out on the track and mess up or don't mess up where they mess up.
Is it ever intimidating to like be in staging and looking around and like realizing all those kids are that fast?
Yeah, kind of, especially, I mean, especially most of them kind of, not pointing any fingers, but a lot of us off the track talk crap to each other. But,
I can probably picture who's like number one on the list.
Grace.
oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's fine if we call him out. We'll hear it from him towards us too, so.
No,
Yeah.
you guys are a great group of drivers, and it's fun to watch. It's fun to call the races, and it gets us excited because it's like that power to weight ratio. I mean, that's what we need to see in stadium trucks. It's these little mod
Right.
carts in front of 50,000 people.
After Crandon, you're third in the mod cart points. You were third going into the weekend, but you did lose a little bit of space to Lincoln Monsager, who was leading the points. What does that do, or what does that mean for your expectations for the rest of this year, that you're still there in striking distance?
Basically just pushing a lot harder, just trying to constantly land back on the podium. I mean, Saturday we didn't have the greatest finish. We didn't even finish Saturday because I think we broke half a lap in or a lap and a half in. And yeah, just keep pushing harder and getting better every lap and kind of just picking and choosing. Take your time getting to the front. Don't wreck yourself and make sure you can get there before you do get wrecked or something happens.
Have you been a lot of hands-on with your own mod car this year, even more than the previous years? I mean, does that give you more of a drive to want to work on your car, or do you have your guys that prep it?
Me and my dad work a lot on it. We do a lot of stuff at home, but when we can, from the late model and the mod car. I do a lot of stuff on the late model by myself
Nice.
because it's at home and I can go from school or whatever, go home and work on it. The mod car, I do a lot of stuff also. I mostly, my dad's a big, if I'm not there working on it, it's not going on the track.
Good job,
So,
Dad.
yeah.
So next up on the schedule in just a couple days now is ERX Motor Park round 7 and 8. Last year was, not the results you wanted. I think your best finish over the 2 days was an 8th place. But going back a couple years before that, in the 570s, your last time you raced a 570 at ERX, you won that race. What makes ERX a really challenging track to drivers?
Probably just the big, like long straightaways to tight corners. It really throws people off, and just how many ups and downs there are, and just blind corners, kind of. You don't really know what you're ever coming into.
Yeah, that elevation is crazy at ERX Motor Park, and you got to be on the wheel. You can't take your eyes off anything. I mean, there was previous years, right, Shane, that we've seen so many cautions and red flags, and it can turn into a long day there.
I feel like we had a long mod cart race there last year with a couple stoppages.
Saturday, I think.
Corbin's fault. No.
There was a little bit of everybody. That there was a lot of junk made that day.
With a challenging track like it is, and I think for me, and from where I sit, and again, I'm not a driver, but what I see at ERX is that just the way the dirt changes from one lap to the next is really unlike any other track. It really is like a motocross track almost. Does that make you approach it a little bit differently, knowing that like a great line on lap one might be gone by lap three?
Yeah, that dirt really changes. It's like, I don't know, it's a weird compound, I guess. It's like really loamy and it's super heavy and just, it can be one lap one time, and then by the time you come back around, the track changes so much that, I mean, it could go from like low to high, back to low by the end of the race.
Yeah, and if you guys get a tore up track, I mean, your wheelbase is only so wide. You guys find the new line, even though the regular cars go through it. So no matter what, yeah, she's going to get torn up.
Yeah.
What's the excitement level for you going into this weekend? I mean, you're prepared, we get that, but is it like just any other weekend, or is this the time to put the green flag down and go after the wins?
Yeah, probably just go after the wins. We did that 570 year. We broke in Lena, and then we just kind of came back out swinging for Bark River, and then that's what we were all going for at the end of the year, which is wins, and then we came out with the championship. I mean, last year, we didn't have the greatest results. There was a lot of, we made a lot of jumps that weekend. We just come back out swinging and hopefully can land on the podium a couple of times, maybe a win or two. I know we have the speed to do it. It's just getting to the front and staying with Lincoln before he can run away.
Like you said, you've kind of been in this spot before and you've won a championship before. Do you really think about the big picture about trying to win a championship, or do you just kind of approach every race as a brand new day and then kind of let the cards fall how they fall?
Let the cards how they fall. Kind of come into the race, try to do your best. If you get the opportunity, go for it. But don't wreck yourself going for it also. Just kind of take your time, bide your time, and if it comes to you, it comes to you.
Yeah, the biggest thing is you got to get two good, solid finishes. It's the halfway point of the season coming up, and now's the time to go. Plus, you can't afford two DNFs.
Yeah.
Corbin, we appreciate you making time for us a second time after the tech issues wiped our first interview from the face of the earth. I do have one question before we cut you loose. How's driver's ed been going?
Pretty good. I'm almost all done with it. I have tomorrow and then I'm done.
You'll get there.
So you've almost learned how to drive.
Yeah, I'm getting there. I just have to turn 15, then I'll be able to drive.
Well, hey man, we really appreciate you. We wish you the absolute best of luck this weekend at ERX, and we hope to catch up with you. There you go. Yeah, I know we had planned to do that at Crandon, and then everything was time crunched with weather and all other sorts of stuff going on. So you're welcome anytime, and you know that.
All right, thank you.
Brent, you've touched on this a couple times earlier that ERX is the halfway point of the season for sportsmen and for the pros. At this point, I want to break down the seven pro classes, where we stand with the points. If you're following along at home, this would be the point where you'd take out a sharpened number two pencil. Make sure you have an extra just in case something goes wrong with the first one. And do your best to keep up with all the numbers that I'm going to throw out here. We'll kind of go through in order of, I guess, less dramatic towards most dramatic. And you can probably already guess which ones are going to be saved for the end. First up, Pro Light. Again, smaller class in Pro Light this year, Brent, but it's pretty much down to two drivers battling for the points. Connor Berry has the points lead, and Michael Funk trails by 19 points. But again, Michael has already proven that he can win. It's down to those two, but this could still be a really good championship battle between those two, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's great to have Connor Berry back. I mean, Drake Mateig did a wonderful job picking up a win and getting things in the right direction for him to be in the points championship. And Michael Funk's been fast. We know that all season long, and he's got to stay with that pace. He's got to limit the mistakes, and he's got to focus on Connor Berry, because I think you're right. I think those are going to be the ones to watch all the way the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I really do think that even in a smaller class, I think it's going to be a fun points battle between those two. And a lot of it's going to come down to both of those drivers need to make sure that they're finishing races. You can't have a big letdown in a small class. You know, you have to be able to make it to the end of these races.
Yeah, and you have to. You can't afford those two DNFs or even one DNF, and there's not a lot of points to grab onto. I mean, granted, if we had 13, 14 trucks in Pro Light, you could afford that bad day or a drop day in your own head, but it's all go time in Pro Light. With five trucks in the class, if you want to win the championship, you got to just win races, and that's what I think we're going to see at the middle part of this season, is we're going to see one or two guys really stretch it out.
Next up, let's break down pro side-by-side. So let's look at the top three in points. CJ Greaves, third in the points. He's 28 back at first. Nathan Wolf, who's already got a handful of second place finishes this year, 11 points back of the points leader, Jeb Boodle. Boodle's been on top of the podium a bunch of times. Nathan Wolff's been next to him in second on the podium a bunch of times. And CJ Greaves is a former class champion. This feels set up to be a really good title fight between those three, and pro side-by-side being such a big competitive class, and there are a bunch of other fast drivers that can win. I think it's really about, again, trying to find whatever consistency you can find.
That's the thing. You have to be there in the end, but yet you've got to just continue on those top threes. And we have a lot of talent in the field, but we see those top three in our points right now, and that's where my eyes will stay the rest of the season, I believe, because each and every time we get to that halfway point, it's normally our same top three, four drivers that duke it out until the end. And ERX will mix things up a little bit, I believe, being a bigger, faster track, a lot more opportunities to make passes as well as make more mistakes for some of the guys.
After another second place finish at Crandon, Nathan Wolff even said on the podium, like, man, this is kind of getting old, finishing second all the time. And I think it's been to Jeb every single time that Nathan has finished second. Do you think this is going to be the weekend where he breaks through and gets that first champ off-road win?
Man, we're waiting for it. I believe this is a great opportunity for him. I mean, you got to have luck on your side, like I say, in any class, and it can beat you up at ERX. And I feel he's in the right position. The right time is now, I believe. If you want to put a stamp on the rest of your season, if you can lay down your first win, hey, I'll tell you what, that the confidence would be over the top.
Well, looking at the other side-by-side class, Pro Stock, Jeb Boodle really does have a chance to double down and win both of these, although he's third in Pro Stock, 24 points out of the lead. David Gay sandwiched there in second, 15 points back of the lead. And Cross Kirchmeyer, after another win, his third of the year through six rounds, is the points leader in Pro Stock. You know, when we talked to Cross on the podcast, he said Crandon is a little tougher to win at for him, just differences in the manufacturers of the cars. Crandon tends to favor Polaris's a little bit more. You know, Hondas and Yamahas have a better fighting chance at the more technical tracks, but he went out and won one at Crandon, and that's catapulted him into a points lead, although pretty slim, over David Gay.
Oh, yeah, and you know, you never know what's going to happen, but David Gay is just one of those drivers that is so fast, so precise. He's out to win, right? He talked about it how many different times that, you know, my first year is to get to know the car, get the feeling right. And then he pretty much said it's blood in the water.
The second year is to execute, were his words.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, like you said, he's in position there, but even more so than I think pro side by side, pro stock does seem to be a little bit deeper with guys that can show up and do really well, show up and win races.
Yeah, it's just a division.
Guys who are further in the point standings, I mean.
Right, absolutely. And that's what makes it so interesting, because when you throw that much talent in one class, it makes our job a lot easier, I can tell you that.
Well, another super talented class that's got a nice points battle shaping up, Pro Buggy. So after a terrible start to his season, Michael Meister rips off four straight wins at Antigo and then Crandon, sweeping those two weekends back to back. Already found his way back to the points lead. Go figure. Billy Booth is 18 points back in second. And Cole Bernlohr, so far having a really fine season, had a win back in round two at Wheatland, was on the podium with a second place finish in round five, I believe, at Crandon, and finding the consistency that it takes to compete for a championship. All three of those drivers have had triumphant moments this year, and all three have run into some bad luck along the way, just like we saw last year with Billy Booth trying to chase down Chaden Minder toward the end of the year. Is it just going to come down to consistency in Pro Buggy for those three?
Yeah, if you can tie down Michael Meister, I believe he's going to be on fire the rest of the year, no matter what. But if you're Billy Booth, yeah, granted, Cole Bernlohr, you have to be there. You have to be, like you said, consistent. Top fives. I mean, top threes are huge, but some days, your worst days, if you get a top five, I mean, you're still picking up the points, and anything can happen, right? We've seen guys go from hero to zero just like that.
Well, it wasn't that long ago that Meister was, what, 13th in the points coming out of Wheatland?
Wow.
Like, any of these guys can have a bad weekend. And Pro Buggy, just like the two side-by-side classes that we talked about, really there's like five, six drivers that can win in that class.
Unbelievable. It's so much fun.
I mean, it's got to be, it's easy for us to sit here with headsets on and talk about finding consistency, but I mean, good luck, man.
Yeah. I like our job title right now because I wouldn't want to be in some of these divisions and try to pan out how the year's going to go. It's so stressful, but yet they're all ready. You know, they know what it takes to win. They're going to do anything in their power to win a race. Anytime that they can get the job done, they got to take that pounce. They got to put it on themselves to get the job done because it's not easy in any division, especially the pro buggy. And it's been years. I get excited about calling the race because it brings us back to the good old days when we had 15, 20 buggies.
Well, the last three classes that we'll talk about, really throw a dart and pick one. I think any of these could be like an all-time points battle. First up, Pro 4 is the smallest group of the three classes, I think, that are kind of in the fight at this point in the season. Jimmy Henderson, the points leader, CJ Greaves, 22 back in second, and then Mickey Thomas, 32 back in third. But we've seen, even last year, Jimmy Henderson can rip off a win streak. Mickey Thomas, three of the last four times he's put a helmet on, he's won in that truck. And of course, CJ is a 10-time champion. It feels like all three of those drivers expect that they're going to win every time out, and they all seem to have the confidence that they belong on top at the end of the year. I think we're set up for like maybe an all-timer among those three throughout the rest of this season.
I mean, they're all great race car drivers. They're fast. They know how to get the job done. They're proven winners in the Pro 4 division. But at the same time, when the Silent Assassin gets in his groove, we've seen it in Pro 2, we've seen it in Pro Light. I mean, once he figures his stuff out, he is one guy to tame. But I know Henderson, Trad, and him have been doing everything to try to innovate new parts, new stuff for their program to make it better each and every time. I mean, you're going to see him come out to war no matter where he goes. And CJ Greaves, he's just that calm, cool, and collected driver that he'll pick up any mistake that you leave him.
I'm trying to think. I guess I'll put the question out to you. Do you remember, it feels like it's been a long time since we really had more than just two drivers at this point in the season that really felt like they all had a chance at a Pro 4 title. Maybe Kyle LeDuc and CJ and Johnny Greaves?
Yeah, it's been quite a while, right? It's been a couple years since we've seen this go on and develop. And yeah, I think we're going to bring back some great times just like we had in the past, but we're going to have three, four trucks up at the front of that field. Like we said, RJ Anderson coming in, he's no slouch. They rebuilt that whole truck after San Bernardino and they got it ready to rock. I mean, I watched his Instagram and they were showing him back in the seat out in California and he looked comfy. And he said, for what we did and revamped this whole truck, it's fast right away. So I don't expect anything but podiums for RJ Anderson.
Yeah, you add him to the mix and you've got Adrian Cheney and Johnny Greaves, Andrew Carlson, Cole Mamer. I mean, that's like a battle royale, man.
Yeah, Cole Mamer.
I think we're in for a treat this weekend.
Yeah, Mamer's been throwing down laps right after Crandon. He had some stuff he wanted to fix, and sure enough, he was right back at it, dialed in his stuff, and he's going to be fast. I mean, we've seen that in the past, what he can do with a brand new truck right away, and it's going to be fun. And then you got your older drivers in the class, John Greaves. I mean, it's crazy to see him nonstop, always bouncing back, having a great day, even after a bad day. He's one to watch, and I think don't hold anything against him. He's going to be right there up until the end as well, just mixing it up with the best in the business.
Especially when it comes to ERX, it seems like at least one Pro 4 race at ERX comes apart at the seams and totally unravels, and that's been the trend. I mean, every year at Champ Off-Road, I can remember a race that was just insane for one reason or another, whether it was dramatic contact or a crazy battle that came right down to the wire, or you name it, it's happened in Pro 4 ERX. Do you think we're in store for at least one and maybe two of those this weekend?
Yeah, I think we're going to have it both days. I mean, I believe Saturday and Sunday, we're going to have just a rock out fest fight there in the end, right up until the mandatory. I mean, you never know who can keep their truck together till that halfway point is the big thing. But I think if we can keep all our Pro 4s healthy, I couldn't put it on it. I couldn't tell you what, who or when is going to win. You know, I mean, that's the big thing is I can't ever count out CJ Greaves. I'm waiting for him just to bounce back after his long drought of sitting out of the truck. I said it was like riding a bike for him, and I feel he's going to be scary there as well.
Well, another class where more and more truly does seem like just about anybody can win or run up front, Pro Spec. this is the wildest points battle, I think. Here's the top seven. So Wyatt Miller, we talked about his bad luck. He's seventh in the points, 50 points out of first. Above him, Hunter VanZile is minus 44. Dylan Parsons is minus 42. Draxton Schimmick, 33 points out of first. Avery Hemmer, 23 out of first. Chris Vanden Elsen, 11 points back. And Nick Visser leading the points. But my goodness, it really does feel like any of those drivers could snap off a good weekend at ERX and jump three spots in the points or more, right?
Yeah, and we've seen what happened with Michael Meister, right? You have one bad weekend, you bounce back, and you take the points lead going into the following weekend. And that is huge in the Pro Spec division, right? Anybody can win from here on out and win that point championship. It's just who's going to be ready, who's going to be in the right position, the right place and time to be in that top three. And it's not going to be an easy task for Wyatt Miller to bounce back, but if anybody can do it, he can, right? He's a points champion, he's a young race car driver, but he's in a different car every week. I think it just transitions nicely in his off-road world.
If you had to look in the crystal ball and maybe pick out three of those seven drivers that it's going to come down to the wire, who are your top three? No particular order.
Man, I'd have to say Visser, Vanden Elsen, and Miller. I mean, not in that exact order, but I feel like they're going to be the ones to really turn it on in this second half.
Your guess is as good as mine. I don't know that I can agree or disagree with you. For what it's worth, we are going to Avery Hemmer's home track, though.
Yeah, and she can really wheel a pro spec, and it'll be fun to watch her, right? She's going to want to win in her hometown and see what she can do on a sled, let alone in an off-road truck. She's just one to watch. She just continues to just impress.
And in the battle between the old guys and the kids, by the way, the old guys seem to kind of get the upper hand at Crandon, if you're keeping score of that at home.
I love how we keep talking about the old guys.
The final pro class to talk about, Pro 2, and this is another one that I think it was tighter than I expected it to be when I looked after Crandon. I'm like, oh man, there's five drivers that are really in the title fight as we're approaching halfway. You got Jacob Rosales in the top five, only 36 out of first. Kyle Greaves, 27 out of first. Johnny Holcher, 22 out of first. Ricky G, 17 out of first. And Ryan Beat leading the points. We do know that Keegan is out of the fight, unfortunately. Like we said, not going to be able to make it to ERX. Those five drivers, that's a fun mix of guys. You got Ryan Beat, who's been close a couple times in Pro 2, but hasn't been able to push it across the finish line. Now Ricky G starting to win races. Holcher already a winner in his brand new truck this year. Kyle Greaves, a couple years into his Pro 2 journey, starting to find that consistency and chase down those last couple percent, you know, to be a guy that can win every time they go out on the track. And then Rosales, the guy on the rise, who we've seen get a whole lot faster over the last 12 months.
Yeah, and just as you say their names, it's so hard to predict who's going to win. I mean, Ryan Beat's been just such a rocket ship, so fast, putting a great program together. I mean, like you said, Johnny Holcher, he's fast in that new Mikey Vandenhoevel ride, and I knew he was going to be quick right away, and he had some gremlins back and forth through the race. I mean, he'll overcome that, and he'll be one to watch. But I love what you say about Jacob Rosales. He's a young driver, very talented, and now he's in the right shoes with the right truck, and he's showing a lot of speed, and we're going to see some more wins out of him as well.
You know, we talk about the old guys against the kids in Pro Spec. Do you think Ryan Beat's looking around like, oh man, I'm the only old guy?
He just wants to win. He don't care who's in the field. He wants to win. And with Ricky G in the field, showing that speed, having some bad luck at Crandon, I mean, those jumps just took and put torture on those vehicles jumping off the barn. It was just a matter of time when the weakest point was going to show for some of those Pro 2s. And as much suspension as you have and you think you have it, I mean, they are breakable.
I still can't believe you've hit that jump in a Pro Light.
Oh, it hurts, I promise.
You couldn't pay me enough.
All those guys out there in those different divisions, when they hit off those jumps, it's like, man, TV does not do you justice. I promise you that.
My back hurts when I rake too hard, let alone landing with 14 inches of travel off that thing. There are a couple of really fun sportsman point scenarios I want to talk about. The notable ones are a couple drivers with a chance to win two sportsman class championships. Colt Wersba in stock truck and super stock has a shot. He's 22 points back in stock truck behind Dustin Rogaczewski. But right now, Colt Wersba, after that wild race at Crandon in super stock, leads the points by three over Nick Bing. And then on the youth side of things, William Holcher, perfect so far in the 570s. He's a perfect 6 for 6. And only trails Peyton Weisbrod by 7 points and youth side by side. So those two drivers have a chance to do something that hasn't been done since 2020 when Billy Booth won the championship in 1600 and light buggy.
Yeah, it's history in the books, right? I mean, they're putting themselves in position to do well in both classes. We've seen CJ Greaves over the years do that in multiple classes, but to have your eyes set on two different championships, that's got to be a struggle in itself, but yet you got to keep your game face on and keep moving forward.
Hard enough to win one championship, let alone two at a time.
Oh, I know. And Colt Wurzba, he's been there.
Well, now, dear listener, I can give you the good news. Pencils down. That's all the numbers that we have to throw at you other than weather forecast here in a moment. But all things considered, a whole bunch of really great points battles on the sportsman side that are going to be fun to keep an eye on. Pretty soon I got to bust out my spreadsheet and start dealing with the points adjustments for the drop rounds. People out there, you see it, Brent, but the people out there, they have no idea how much I nerd out about points championships.
Oh, yeah. Usually by Bark River, Shane, you got those pencils out there and your computer out, and it's going to get good. It's going to come down to the wire in a lot of these classes, and ERX Motor Park is going to be a big weekend for a lot of our drivers. If you want to start that second half in the right direction, it's good to leave that long toe from Minnesota back home to know that you not only got the points lead, but you got a fast enough car to get you through the rest of the year.
Yeah, and there's so much to love about ERX. We've mentioned it a couple times already on this show, but man, just the elevation. It's such a unique track. The surface is unlike any other surface that we race on. It truly is like a motocross track, just how much the track changes from one lap to the next. You got split lanes, big airtime. The way I've described it on the broadcast before is that there's no place on the racetrack to take a break. You're either, you know, 90 miles an hour, or you're in the air, or going over a blind hill around a corner. Just a barrage of challenges that these drivers will be up against this weekend.
Yeah, it's definitely a mind game. It's fun to watch, and if you win at ERX Motor Park, that's a challenge in itself. I mean, I've been lucky enough to announce there for so many seasons now, and I love going back there. I love everything about it. I still never got to a snowcross race there. I really want to get to in the winter, but they have a little bit of everything. Great people, great racetrack, and like I said, if you want to win a race, I would love to do it at that place.
Great people, great racetrack, and great weather for this weekend as well. Again, take every forecast we give you with a grain of salt, but all 3 days, high 80s, low 90s for the highs, no rain expected, daytime or nighttime throughout the weekend, so the track is going to be absolutely flawless. It's going to be fantastic. Bring your sunscreen, maybe an umbrella for the shade.
Yeah, and don't be shutting off our AC, right?
Well, we go live on Flow Racing Saturday morning, 9:45 a.m. Central Time for Round 7. That's Sportsman Opening Ceremonies. Pro Racing, Pro Opening Ceremonies, 4 p.m. Central. And Round 7, Saturday, we will be live on Amazon Prime Video. So if you're not a Flow Racing subscriber, but you are an Amazon Prime subscriber, you can find us there. Go to the Live TV tab. Click the sports section, scroll down a little bit, you'll find the Flow Racing 24/7 channel. I know a lot of my friends here back home were able to tune in from Crandon, so more places to find us. And of course, above all, we hope that you find us there at ERX Motor Park.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast, Shane. I cannot wait to get to ERX Motor Park. This is a big one. This is going to be huge for our sport and Amazon Prime. We can't thank them enough for having us, and we're going to do our best to give you the best coverage possible.
Trying to get 1% better every day. That's all we can do. But that is it for this one on the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. He's Brent. I'm Shane. We will talk to you again from the great state of Minnesota very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil.
That's not my best ad read work, but
I was wondering where you were going. I was like, oh, it's got to be the AMSOIL.